Hey, Bat Family, it's Inkiru here. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. If this is your first time listening, thank you so much and welcome to the Bat Family. If you're a returning listener, you know I love you dearly and I appreciate your ongoing support. If you haven't already, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform as well as on our YouTube. It's free. And if you'd like to support our podcast financially with a one-time or monthly contribution of a dollar or more, please visit anchor.fm/BLDG Africa's Future/support. You can also find more details about that and more in our show notes or by following our Instagram page at Building Africa's Future, BUILDING Africa's Future. As usual, I invite you to join the conversation and you can start by sharing this episode and our podcast with anyone that you think might enjoy it. Thank you so much once again, and happy listening. This is Conversations from the Diaspora, and as usual, I'm your host, your sister, and your friend, Inkiru. And tonight, I'm joined by a special guest. Her name is Daria Warmly. She is the CEO and founder of the Sailor Justice Project, a grant writing consulting business that she started to help POC and women-owned businesses secure grant funding. She's also passionate about the international education space and would like to work with international educationally focused companies that are looking to diversify their international education and contribute to the DEIB diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging frameworks in all aspects in that field of education. So thank you so much, Daria, for coming on the podcast and for your willingness to share your story. If you could just say a few words to our listeners.
Hey, so thank you for having me. So hello, nice to be here. Great to be here. This was started as just a reach out on LinkedIn and snowballed into this opportunity. So I'm really happy to be here. And really excited and glad that we were able to finally do it. I know we had to reschedule and all things like that, but I think this was like the perfect timing. So I'm just excited to be here and to be heard today.
Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you so much, Daria. Like you rightly said, you know, I saw your post on LinkedIn. Can't believe it's been 5 months, but right? I know you're talking about your experience about being the only Black girl, you know, on the study abroad trip, which is something that I can relate to. And you and I, we had a really great chat about that. So for the sake of our listeners, if you can just kind of share, you know, what prompted that post, and if you can just talk a little bit more about your experience being the only one, to be only Black person in a international student experience program.
Gotcha. So yeah, so what prompted me to post that starts with kind of like the mass exodus of education. I was working in student affairs in the kind of the traditional realm of higher education, and was looking to make a pivot, and I thought international education would be a great place to pivot to, because in my prior experience as a graduate student, I did a international education trip in grad school, and I was the only Black girl on that trip, and there were so many things that happened from the moment that I decided to go on the trip all the way up until departure and coming back, that how I was impacted and the trauma around that, over the trauma that happened around a really fun and enjoyable trip. There was still trauma that happened for lack of understanding in education in the DEIB space. And so I decided to write about my experience to let other international educators know, this was my experience as a student, and this is what I won't bring to the table, and this is what I'm looking to change and fix. Where can I fit in into the international education space as a professional to help be a solution to this problem? And so like everything down to like, you know, this sounds small, but one of the things that I had talked about in some of my informational interviews that I did with some international education professionals was, when you talk about providing stipends to students to get ready, when a student is on scholarship or is receiving some kind of funding from a department to go on an international education trip, you know, there's funding. Sometimes people can provide funding for luggage and things like that.
Right.
You know, for Black women, our hair is more expensive in because of systemically how our hair has been oppressed and discussed and the history in that, right? And so where you're talking about having particularly a Black woman going to international education experience, going to get our hair braided is an expense. It's a very expensive thing to do.
Right.
If there was a stipend that was provided for that, that would be something that you could add in addition to whatever it is that you're offering, if you're talking about offering equitable services. Now, that's something as simple as hair, and we can go, you know, there's so much more to unpack that's layered mm-hmm. up with underneath that. But I think that there's definitely, and I think that international education during the pandemic has realized that there is a DEIB problem. And it starts with lack of diversity in the international education space as far as students who are able to participate. And it's also happening on the professional side on who gets to work in these different roles in international mm-hmm. education and who traditionally moves up and is able to be some of the decision makers in the room to advocate for our students of color and some of the very specific needs BIPOC students need in order to travel internationally safely. Not only just safely, but they can get a full experience and have an equitable experience as their other students. So
yes,
that's what prompted me to create that post. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Thanks so much, Daria. I mean, I know you mentioned how, you know, your interest in K-pop and Korean culture kind of sparked this interest in international education. And I know we're laughing because, like, this is, you know, there's so many, you know, different layers to that. But I just kind of want to share a little bit about my experience, because I know, you know, obviously I've told you mm-hmm. about it, but mm-hmm. I don't think I've spoken too much about it with my listeners. You know, I had the opportunity to travel to China when I was in high school. I was, you know, I learned the language. I studied it, you know, for all 4 years in high school, 2 years at the university level. So of course I was excited to go to China, but, you know, as you had mentioned in your post and, you know, in our previous chat, like once you get there, you kind of see that, wow, what I expected or what my experience, what I thought I would, I guess, see when I would come to this new place that I was super excited to travel and visit, you start to see that, you know, people are looking at you, not in amazement, but, well, I guess you can say some level of amazement, but for the most part, there's a lot of negativity surrounding an otherwise experience that should have been positive. So I know if you can just kind of like talk a little bit more about that. I know you mentioned how when you had traveled to, I think, Spain, and I think there's another place that you had mentioned, you said that you didn't realize or you didn't know how, I guess, racism
manifested.
Mm. Yes, mm-hmm. manifested overseas.
Yes, and so I'll preface this by saying that anti-Blackness is a global issue. It's not just specific to the United States. So I'll preface it with that. I studied abroad. I did two international education experiences. One in high school when I was a rising junior in high school, and they had a program at my school and I participated and then 10 days in Spain. In grad school, which is the one that I'm more so talk about in my LinkedIn post, I was the only Black girl in my graduate program, period. And so, of course, I was the only Black person that would attend this international education experience as it was through my program. And so when I went, one of the things that I was concerned about was, how does racism manifest itself outside of my country? I know how to navigate the racism waters within the United States. It's very specific, has a very specific flavor. But even within the United States, you know, like if you go even to different regions of the United States, racism manifests itself maybe a little bit differently. Outside of the country, I'm sure much more so. And you're also talking about, I was going to Spain knowing very little Spanish. And so what, you know, what is it that I can expect? Well, the problem was that I did not feel safe enough to ask those kind of questions to the people that were going to be leading me and guiding me on this trip and experience. Mm. So I had no way to prepare myself for what potentially could happen or could not happen. I just kind of had to wonder what if and hope that my Google searches and the articles that I were reading were legitimate because there's a lot of misinformation out there, right? And so, you know, I want to be informed, but I don't want to be scared unnecessarily. Right. And so it was just starting at the fact that I was unable to ask those questions in the room before I even went. That in itself is a problem. And I know for sure that has prevented a lot of BIPOC students from doing international education altogether.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's really powerful. I mean, I think I'm so happy that you brought that up, because I know that's something that, like, even with my own experience, like going to any country that, you know, I guess maybe now things have changed because so many of us are traveling and seeing the world. And I love that. But I think as of that time, because that was 2006 or something like that, 2008. Yeah, that was 2008. And, you know, that was like right after the Olympics or so, or right before the Beijing Olympics. And I don't think that the Chinese people as of that time were used to seeing a Black person, especially one that spoke Mandarin. So I went with like 14 other students who were, of course, they primarily came from like, I guess, affluent schools within my district. Of course, they were white students. I went with like one other Black student who was a friend of mine, as well as one of our Black program coordinators. So it was just, it was an interesting and very unique experience for all of us, because, you know, it's not something that no one can really prepare you for. You can only just kind of, I guess, read and maybe do whatever research that you can, but it isn't until you get there that you kind of see what the reality is. And I think for someone like me, who, I would say I'm an extra cautious person in general, but, you know, if I am to travel, I want to be as prepared as possible, whether it's knowing the language or, you know, just reading up on different cultural practices, just so I can be fully aware of what I'm getting into. So I guess with that, could you maybe talk a little bit more about maybe how Black students and other students of color, or just people in general who are trying to travel to, I guess, out of the country, how can they prepare for some of these cultural shocks, maybe as it relates to racism or discrimination?
Okay, that is a very loaded question. So, okay, so I'll say that the thing that I don't want to do is perpetuate xenophobia as well, right? So, like, I don't want to talk about this as if, you know, like, you go overseas and the people that themselves, I don't want to make generalizations in that regard. And I also want to preface, want to say that how, because of white supremacy and colonization having a global impact, particularly anti-Blackness, is perpetuated throughout the globe. And so both things exist. And the thing that's really complex, why I say it's a loaded question, is because the thing is that, you know, most of the countries in particular that are of color, that are of melanin, have been touched by colonization and white supremacy in a negative way as well. Right. That impacts these relationships that make it so complicated. And so for within the BIPOC community, it's a little harder to say that, because for me to kind of speak on that, because it's such a complex and like interwoven, complicated situation, where when you're talking about countries that has historically been colonizers in that scenario, I think it's a little bit clearer to kind of speak on kind of what you need to do to kind of prepare yourself to get safe. And I would say the first thing that you would probably want to do is, you know, find community online that's speaking to what it is to travel and be abroad in those countries right now. There's a lot of TikTokers out there, YouTubers and stuff of color that are traveling abroad and speaking to that experience. I'll say that, and also say that anyone can get online and say anything they want to say in a camera. So I think it's just like you were saying, like reading and understanding the culture, because there's also, I've seen on kind of both sides of that coin, misunderstandings.
Right.
Around things, because there's no cultural context. I think Lizzo was a really great example around that, of that there was no harm intended, because a different cultural context, you know, can cause harm and how you handle that. And I think Lizzo's a great example of how you do handle situations like that. So I think reading up on the culture and understanding the, some of the cultural nuances, but also being, I don't want to put the onus on the student. I think the problem is systemic, and that the problem isn't on the student being able to find ways to navigate these waters. Mm. I think the issue lies systemically with the international education in general, and needs to be with the people who are in charge of and owning of and profiting off of these international education experiences. Exactly. And providing a framework that makes it safe for BIPOC students, and specifically identifying how to make it safe for BIPOC students to travel abroad, because that has not something that the system as it exists right now was never created for them to be safe in the first place, because it wasn't created for them, period. And so I think a dismantling and a reassessment of that is really what needs to happen. And until that happens, unfortunately, students will have to take matters into their own hands and kind of, and when I say that, in meaning educating themselves and, right. and building community to get educated on around how to travel internationally safely, and also not participate in xenophobia and fear of, I'm going outside of the country, what do I need to be afraid of? No, what are the cultural things that you need to be to understand before you go? Because also understanding that you are a guest in somebody else's house, and so act right. accordingly.
Right.
And also understanding that while that is happening, anti-Blackness and the impact of white supremacy and colonization has impacted that community. So how does that impact you in all areas? And there's really no way to know that before you go. Some of that you're just going to have to go and see for yourself.
Right.
But again, I think that the major issue that I'm more concerned with is the institutions that facilitate these experiences and the responsibility that they have to those students to do no harm. Because in student affairs, when you graduate with your degree, whether it be a master's or a doctorate, you are called to do no harm. And so in what business practice that maybe have practical and been worked for the last 20 years, is it causing harm? And if so, you know, what is it that we are calling ourselves doing in the education space? And that's not just international education. I think education in general within the United States could definitely listen to that and listen to it probably 2-3 more times.
Yeah. Wow. Thread, that was like super, super powerful. I mean, I think, I guess my next question is like two parts that kind of stem from what you just said. And I guess I'll start with the first one, kind of like tying in like your upbringing, your experience. I know what you mentioned, you know, so many of us, and of course I'm not assuming your lived experience or whatever, but I'm just kind of speaking generally for so many of us in the Black community, African-American community, African diaspora, traveling abroad is not something that, you know, we don't hear about it as often. Again, maybe for this next generation, Gen Z, maybe that's more of what's going to be part of their experience. But I think for us, like going to school, studying abroad wasn't like, I guess, highly encouraged, or depending on the type of school you went to, wasn't, you know, just like, as you mentioned, you were the only one in your program. And when I had went, I was, you know, one of two, and including our program, one of our program directors, one of three. So I think, I know you had mentioned like in our previous chat that you had, you know, that you currently work in, I guess, a community college setting, and you're working on developing, or you're trying to build like study abroad program for students. If you can just talk a little bit more about, you know, maybe the students that you serve, and maybe some of the challenges that you face as it relates to either reaching them or providing these opportunities, or just a little bit more information about that, like how that whole process is working for you or for the school, and, you know, some other, I guess, challenges as it relates to developing these types of programs for our students.
Cool, child. Okay, so it has been 5 months, so a lot has changed since then. When I spoke with you, that was my goal. I was working on building a international education experience. I wanted to do, and this is kind of where in the post, where kind of like K-pop and stuff kind of falls into that.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was that I'm ARMY, I'm a huge fan of BTS. And of course, when I found out they were going to be on the UN, I watched it like everybody else.
Uh-huh.
And so when I watched it, I watched President Moon's speech. He was the president at the time, he's the president right now. But I watched his speech, and he was talking about the work that was being done in South Korea as using technology as a tool to solve some of our sustainability problems. And what I got from that was basically calling to action, like, this is what we need to be doing globally, is using technology as a solution to sustainability. And I was like, yes, like, oh, yes, okay. So in under the grant that I was working in, our students needed to complete so many internships and apprenticeships. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, what if we did an international internship experience for our students, you know, as a grant funded program? What if we, you know, took some of the money from the grant and was able to get some funds around the different departments and figure out a way, whatever it is that we needed to do, to figure out a way to get some students that were interested in technology and sustainability and potentially send them to South Korea for an international education experience. I had no idea how to build a student study abroad program. I had nothing. I just had the idea. So I went to the study abroad office and said, what do you think? Is this possible? Like, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And they loved it, wanted to move forward. Through a series of a lot of meetings and conversations, it did not happen. There's still a lot of misinformation around what an international education experience is. Mm-hmm. You have staff members that have never been abroad for themselves and feel like this is a free vacation for students. So why are we paying for our students to go on vacation? There's also like the stigma around the fact that I was working at a community college. And so, you know, that there was, you know, there's, the first of all, I have thoughts around how students are treated at the community college level. But there's thoughts around, you know, like, well, you know, community college students, you know, need to get out of their neighborhoods first, you know, like before they go all the way over. And I'm not saying that this is anything that was specifically said, but this is the some of the common rumblings that I hear in conversation around international education. And so those were, you know, some of the challenges that I faced, and just really a lack of understanding of how this tied back to what it is to the grant and the things that we were trying to do. And so that's what I was trying to do, but it didn't move forward. And I have since left that position. I know we were going to talk about that later, but I've since left that position and don't work within that grant anymore.
Okay,
for separate reasons,
right? Okay. Okay, well, I mean, so Dorina, if you can, I guess, talk a little bit more about, you know, growing up in Chicago, and, you know, did you see people who were, I guess, interested in like an international education experience? Like, you can just kind of talk a little bit more about anything from childhood or your upbringing that kind of relates to where you are now or how you got to where you are now. If you can kind of tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. So growing up, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, and I went to the local private schools in the area. So grammar school, high school, all the way through. I went to private schools, and high school was a college preparatory school. And so college was the expectation. It was always the expectation. And the high school had a few programs. And one of those programs, that's actually where I had my first study abroad opportunity, was in high school when I was a rising junior. And they had a trip to Spain that students could participate in if they completed so many years of Spanish. And so I got to do that. I wasn't even 16 and I had the opportunity to do that. Nice. I was aware that what I was doing was outside of the ordinary, but mm-hmm. it wasn't until I went to college and looked back that I understood when I started really unpacking my privileged parts along with my oppressed parts, I was able to see what an opportunity that was and how different it was for me to go and have a study abroad experience by the age of 15 to Spain.
Yeah.
As a Black girl that's situated right on the outskirts of the South Side.
That's deep. That's
mm-hmm.
deep.
Mm-hmm.
And Dorina, I mean, I know you brought this up earlier, and it's something that I think about often, you know, as someone who is a global affairs student. Like, I always found it odd how in these types of programs, you know, international studies, global affairs, global studies, you know, all those internationally focused programs, and of course in the field itself, you know, for diplomats, ambassadors, and other people, I've always found it strange how in those kind of realms where they support, you know, I guess the global majority, which looks mostly, you know, Black and brown and everything else, why there's so few of us in those spaces. I mean, I don't know if you want to kind of talk a little bit more about that, and then we can kind of go to, like, I guess our next topic.
Sure, I can touch on that a little bit. So I'll say this by saying, like, I did a lot of informational interviews at the beginning of this year because I was looking to figure out how I wanted to get into international education. And I met some amazingly supportive and loving folks. A lot of those folks offered me wisdom and things like that, that was invaluable and really helped me do what we're about to talk about next. But I think, and through those informational interviews, people of BIPOC community that works in international education was real loud over the beginning of the pandemic about some of the issues in international education, and was calling out in a really loud and very massive and impactful way the systemic racism that impacts themselves to do their job and the students who participate in the in international education experiences. Mm. And so I think the reason that we didn't see a diversity is the same reason we don't see diversity in just about every other aspect of the United States.
Right.
And I think that is changing. Yes. It's not an if, it is, because BIPOC said, like, either turn it around or we moving around, and a whole bunch of folks have already moved around.
Right.
And so there's been a whole lot of moving around and change and things like that. And I mean, I recognize that there's, and like in everything else, because DEIB work is now the hot popping thing on the street. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of performative work happening out there. So I'm not saying that there's, you know, like this magical turnaround that's happening, but there is enough leadership that I have talked to and had conversation with that are not only aware, but actively doing something to change what's happening in international education. Mm. I'm also not currently working in the field, so I don't know what's actually happening right now, right? And so what the actual heartbeat of international education professionals and where they're at right now. But I can say from the informational interviews that I was doing at the beginning of the year, there is change happening. There's some performative work happening and deciphering through what's performative and what's actual change, and leaning into doing the hard and dirty work of actual change. I think that international education has a chance to really make a change in what it's historically been. But you know, as with all things, time will tell.
That's right. That's right. Thank you so much, Daria. I mean, I guess if you can just kind of tie this all into, you know, your current project with the grant writing and consulting to help, you know, yeah, if you can tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. So, like I said, I left my position and I left and in doing some healing and thinking and things like that, I opened the Sailor Justice Project LLC, which is a grant writing and consulting business. And so I saw the issue in international education around diversity, but the other thing that I saw, and not just international education, but in all businesses, that BIPOC and women-owned businesses have a harder time securing funding either to sustain their business or to get started. And you know, even if you can get a loan, because systemic racism, interest rates for BIPOC folks can be higher, it can be harder to get the loans at all. Grants is money that you don't have to pay back. And so a lot of times it's just capacity. People don't have the capacity to write the grant, don't know the first place to start, because grant writing is a full-time job and can be a really daunting task. And so I thought I would offer my services to those businesses to help them get the funds that they need. Specifically within international education, I wanted to work with particularly companies that are doing the work to integrate DEIB frameworks into international education as a whole. So, you know, the ones that are doing the real work and not the performative stuff and helping BIPOC and woman-owned international education companies secure funding so that they can continue to do their work. I also know that due to COVID, there were a lot of smaller international education companies that have not financially recovered. And unfortunately, some of them had to close due to the pandemic. And so I also saw that and wanted to help, but I just kind of didn't know how. And so creating this business just seemed like the natural solution to that. And so it kind of started with in the international education space, but then I zoomed out and said, well, I could help, you know, any BIPOC woman-owned business secure funding, you know, that's helping to do this, doing this work, right? So that's what I'm doing. And how, and of course, kind of like how it ties back to international education, again, it was when I was trying to figure out how to interview to get a job within the space that I was doing all these informational interviews and getting all this information that really helped me to see where one of the problems were. And that was some of these smaller international education companies are attempting to do the work. They just don't have the capacity and need funds to hire staff and do the things to make it happen. So yeah, that's what I'm doing and excited to do that work and to serve. We have free webinar. We have free webinars happening the rest of this year, all the way through December. And then I can share, you know, my Instagram and all of that stuff, where all of the dates and links are for all of that. So, yeah.
Yes, please. I mean, if you can just let our listeners know, you know, how they can support the work you're doing, how they can connect with you and any other thing that you'd like to share.
OMG. Okay. So I don't know why I just got nervous all of a sudden. Now I have to talk about myself. So anything that you can do is attend the webinar. We have the registration link. It's in the Sailor Justice Instagram and on TikTok. On Instagram, I am SailorJustice_. And on TikTok, I'm pulling it up because I have underscores. Okay, Sailor _ Justice is TikTok. And the registration for the free webinars are there. So if you know someone that owns a business, if you're thinking about starting a business and you'd like to secure funding, come to the Sailor. It's called Spring into Grant Writing with the Sailor Justice Project. Our next webinar is August 13th, and it's called Federally Speaking, Considerations for Federal Grant Writing. And then we're going to have one in September, October, November, and December. And when you register and you'll continue to get information about all of the webinars coming up. So totally. If you don't have a business, share it out with somebody that has it, share it on your social media. And that would help a lot.
Nice. That's incredible, Doreena. I really do. You know, again, appreciate you for even taking this time to, you know, chat with me and to share with the listeners, like all of these great things that you're doing and the work that you've done in the international education space. I don't know. Do you happen to have just maybe any other thing you might want to share about, you know, I guess what you've learned either from, you know, the pandemic and from your posts, maybe the social media interactions, anything that you've learned in this entire process that you would like to share?
Sure. The one thing that I've learned over the pandemic is that loving yourself is a full-time job, and sometimes it means making hard and uncomfortable decisions to choose yourself. And, you know, I also say that, you know, like I say probably everywhere that I'm like Army AF, but BTS truly did teach me how to love myself in a way that I have not given my permission to do in my entire adult life. And I'm like really, really grateful for that. So there's that. And, you know, I think if you are in a situation where you're kind of indecisive about what it is that you want to do, I would say sit down, write down what it is that you want out of your life, and are the things and the people around you aligned with that and giving you and fulfilling energy in that? And that'll help you make some tough decisions and choosing yourself. So yeah, I guess I'll end with choose yourself and stay hydrated. Drink some water.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's a message. Thank you, Doreena. It's truly been a pleasure. I really do appreciate you once again.
Oh yeah, this has been great. This has truly been like a chill conversation. I feel like I'm just like at the crib talking to my friend on the phone.
Hey, Bat Family. Thank you so much once again for tuning in to today's episode. I hope that you enjoyed our conversation today. I would love to know your thoughts and any feedback that you may have on this particular episode, this particular topic. Please feel free to leave us a voice message, or you can comment on our promo image. You can find us on our Instagram at Building Africa's Future. Please go to the links in the bio to find out about how you can purchase our new merchandise. We do have new shirts available for $25 all the way up to $30. We would love for your continued support. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. And as usual, I hope that you stay well. Thanks, Bat Family.